Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect it is 2:32 p.m. on Thursday, April 28, 2022. Present today are Representative Thompson, Representative LeBon, Representative Edgman, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Josephson, Representative Johnson, myself, Co-Chair Merrick. This afternoon, we will consider Senate Bill 81, Village Public Safety Officer Grants, by Senator Olson. This is the companion legislation to House Bill 313 by Representative Zulkowski, which we heard and took public testimony on our April 5th meeting. Mr. Co-Chair, do you have a motion on the committee substitute?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair. I move that the House Finance Committee adopted committee substitutes for Senate Bill 81, Work Draft 32-LS0362-W, dated April 22, 2022, be moved as our working document.
Object for discussion. I will have my staff, Sorsha Hazelton, come to the table and explain the changes in version W. Ms. Hazelton, let the record reflect at 2:33, we're joined by Representative Carpenter. And I would like to acknowledge we have Commissioner Cockrell in the audience with us today. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the House Finance Committee. For the record, Sorsha Hazelton, staff to Co-Chair Merrick. In coordination with the sponsors of this bill, Senate Bill 81, and the House companion HB 313, the CS before the committee this afternoon matches the House version B the committee considered on April 5th. The two bills were already substantively the same, and the House language is under consideration. There are no changes to what the committee has already heard.
Thank you. Are there questions regarding the committee substitute? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. Is there further objection to adopting the committee substitute? Hearing none, committee substitute is adopted. We'd like to welcome Senator Olson to the committee. If you would like to come to the table and put any opening remarks on the record.
Madam Chairman, if I could have my staff come up as well.
Absolutely, welcome. Let the record reflect that 2:34, we were joined by Representative Wolf. Senator.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and distinguished members of the House Finance Committee. It's certainly an honor to come before you today on this beautiful day out there that as we near the end of the session, all our thoughts and ideas are, you know, homeward bound and all that other stuff that goes on. So I appreciate you spending the time during this very busy period to try and get some things through that are very important. And again, I want to say thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Donald Olson. I represent Alaska State Senate District T, which is one of the larger geographic districts within the state. I'm happy to go ahead and run through the sponsor statement for Senate Bill 81. However, Representative Zulkowski has run the House companion bill before your committee a few weeks ago. These bills are extremely similar, and especially now with the CS that was just adopted, with the amendments that are there. We support those amendments, as does the department. Otherwise, I'm happy to go ahead and answer any questions, specific questions that you may have.
Thank you. Are there questions before public testimony? Hearing none. Representative Wool.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Questions on the bill at all, or are we going to get back to it if we have any questions at all on the bill?
Questions on the bill is fine. Go ahead.
Okay, I don't want to slow down the process. I just had a couple questions that after going over the bill. I didn't know what your sequence of events was, but I guess I had a couple questions for anybody. And I know, I remember hearing different committees over the years, discussions of EPSO and finding and recruiting people and background checks and difficulty sometimes of finding people to pass a background check. And this one says, cannot be previously convicted of a felony sex offense, misdemeanor involving domestic violence unless 10 years have passed, or if the conviction was against intimate partner, spouse, child, or parent. And domestic violence, I guess, intimate partner, spouse, child. That would pretty much cover most of domestic violence, correct? Unless it's a sibling or a aunt or uncle. You understand what I'm asking? In other words, unless 10 years have passed and the conviction was not an intimate partner, spouse, child, or parent, that would pretty much say any domestic violence at all, period, would prohibit, even if 10 years have passed. Am I reading this correctly?
Madam Chair.
Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, Representative Wool, what document are you reading off of specifically?
On page 7, line 22, on the work draft, backslash W.
It's one of those things that I think you are correct in what you're saying, but before we pass that on, I'd like to have the department go ahead and comment on it, because they are the ones that have looked over the bill intensively, and they are the ones that are most affected by it. And so, Madam Chair, I'd like to go ahead and get a lifeline.
Yes, we have both Commissioner Cockrell with us, as well as Joel Hard, the director of the VPSO program. So can we begin with Commissioner Cockrell? Sounds fantastic. Mr. Hard, director of the Village Public Safety Officer Operations with the Department of Public Safety. Welcome to House Finance. Please place yourself on the record and help Representative Wool with his question.
Good afternoon, Madam Co-Chair. Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joel Hard, Director of the Village Public Safety Officer Program, Department of Public Safety. You'll see in the bill restrictions on who is eligible based on previous convictions. It reflects the high standards relative to this program as well as other law enforcement agencies. So Representative Wold is correct that it would prohibit anyone previously convicted of a felony or a sex offense or a misdemeanor crime involving domestic violence involving a domestic partner, meaning the spouse, partner, child, or parent. It's intended to restrain the hiring of people with a particular background of criminal conduct.
Representative Wool.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to have you explain that, and thank you for doing so. I guess what it means is basically anyone's convicted of domestic violence, even if it's more than 10 years, if it's an intimate partner, spouse, child, or parent, which would probably be the most common types of incidents, that it would basically prohibit someone from passing a background check. And I'm not advocating on their behalf necessarily. I just know in past years' testimony, there's been difficulty sometimes finding applicants that pass the background check. And I've heard from people in the industry saying similar things, that the 10-year part might make it a little more flexible, but it looks like the language following the 10 years for most domestic violence would make it make that person ineligible. And I guess, do you feel that would be burdensome in some instances?
Thank you. And let the record reflect, at 2:37 p.m., we were joined online by Representative Rasmussen. Mr. Hard.
Through the chair, Representative Wolf. If you read farther down, you'll see that that there are some relaxations with other misdemeanors with a five-year limitation, recognizing, I think, what you're speaking to in terms of trying to make sure that we don't prohibit certain conduct for too long a period of time. But I think what I read in the bill and in the history associated with these sorts of limitations is that Alaska has a serious problem with violence, in particular sexual violence and domestic violence, and that's not the right place for us to lessen the standard for eligibility.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Along the same lines, can you explain to me why a waiver needs to be granted in that circumstance?
Mr. Hard?
Waivers are granted, or through the chair, waivers are granted, generally speaking, because there are related, criminal justice information system related activities that these officers undertake. And there are restrictions from the Federal Bureau of Investigations and NCIC about who can access that information. And so a waiver is necessary from the department to apply for their access to that information. That's the purpose of the waiver.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. Madam Co-Chair, through the Chair, are waivers granted as a regular practice already outside of the Village Public Safety Officer program with other officers or other individuals within the department?
Mr. Hart.
Through the Chair, I can't answer that as well as perhaps somebody else might. I can tell you since I've been here, we've submitted, I think, three waivers on behalf of VPSOs. Similar waivers would be necessary for other agencies, but I don't have any information with respect to how frequent those are.
Thank you. We'll invite Commissioner Cockrell to the table. Thank you for being here, Commissioner.
Through the Chair, James Cockrell, Commissioner of Alaska Department of Public Safety. Thank you for seeing this important bill. So, do you want me to ask your question? Through the Chair, Representative Carpenter, there are occasions where the department grants waivers to, particularly to our department, for procedures information, which is our criminal justice information. Usually there are convictions as potentially DUI. It could be a case that I have to review each case, each circumstances, to allow even a person, a contractor, come into our building that doesn't meet the procedures requirements. In fact, I granted one about 10 days ago for our Slobodna Post. But basically, you got to look at the totality of the circumstances, what the conviction was, how long the conviction was it against the person. But there's some guidelines that I follow. But I guess to answer your question in a short, yes, we do provide waivers for other department members.
And yes, Representative.
Just for clarification, is that for specifically for domestic violence for other members? I understand you were talking about DUIs and other crimes or other convictions, but is it specifically issuing waivers for other domestic violence convictions?
Through the Chair, Representative Carpenter, I don't believe I've ever granted a waiver for a domestic violence crime. And I will say I don't want to get too much in the weeds, but our state domestic violence statutes are different than the federal state. We include about anybody can be a victim of domestic violence and charged where under federal law, a conviction or a person that commits domestic violence is an intimate partner. So there's a big expansion how we deal with, statutorily how we deal with domestic violence, if this makes sense, than what the actual federal regulations are on domestic violence by definition.
Representative Carpenter.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess because the waiver is written into the bill, or not the waiver, but the exception here, the 10-year exception and the allowance for a waiver, there's a necessity there. It speaks to a necessity. So is it hard to find candidates without any misdemeanor domestic violence convictions that would meet, you know, the other additional good moral character requirement? How does that fit together?
Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, thank you very much.
Sure.
Representative Carpenter, speaking to your question about is it hard to go ahead and recruit people, and I would say yes, it is very difficult because for example, in the Northwest Arctic Borough, where we just had two significant tragedies where a family of four were killed in a fire, and then another one was suffered the demise that I don't really want to go into the details on right now, and we have not one VPSO person that's up there. So recruitment and retention is a very significant problem throughout the VPSO served areas there. And so because of that, that's why I put this bill forward, to specifically point toward trying to get recruitment and retention back up.
Representative Carpenter?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess I know it's a sensitive topic. We've been discussing throughout this legislative session numerous times trying to make a dent in domestic violence and sexual assault. And it seems to me that if we're wavering that for our law enforcement officers, that that might be kind of a conflict of interest or a credibility problem. I guess it would really have to be on a case-by-case basis. But I don't know. This makes me uncomfortable a little bit.
Madam Chair, I just want to comment on that. As you pointed out, it is on a case-by-case basis. Representative Carpenter, and I think the commissioner pointed that out, that they look at it with a very high amount of scrutiny before they grant a waiver. It's not taken lightly.
Thank you. Representative Edgman.
Yeah, having served on the working group that preceded this legislation, having been around the village public safety officer program for many years, both as a legislator and before, I think just a little bit of context for this provision might be helpful. First off, it's very difficult to get BPSOs in communities, very difficult. And the best BPSOs are those that know the community well, who, if it's Alaska Native Village, which predominantly it would be, has ties to the culture, the heritage, certainly, the people involved in the village. And BPSOs are first responders for everything, top to bottom, not just law enforcement, but they're the jack of all trades in the communities. And the way that this language came forward, as I understood it, and I would invite the commissioner or the bill sponsor to say otherwise, but that this language is the very rare exception that should it occur, because I think there might be one case, Commissioner, that where this was this language might have come into play. I don't remember it actually resulted in the individual becoming a BPSO, but this to me is an additional tool in a toolbox that we can't have enough tools in, because we don't have the ability to recruit, retain, even attract BPSOs. And so I can't speak for the department, but my understanding is that this will be used sparingly, maybe never, or very rarely used, but it's still a tool in the toolbox that we can use to attract a competent BPSO, maybe a young person who did something in his younger years that involved alcohol, for example. And, alcohol is a big issue in rural Alaska. But somebody who 10 years henceforth, 15 years, 20 years, whatever the time period might be, has turned the corner in life and has been an upstanding citizen, and that individual might make a good BPSO candidate. So I think that context, to me, helps me come to grips with this provision in the bill. I understand others concerned about it, and I think the questions are appropriate, but I think that that background helps.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Representative Edgman, I think you hit the nail on the head on that one. We as adults here, and some of us are more seasoned than others, have gone through that time of in our lives where we would probably not make the same decision or do the same things that we've done in the past. But we're all human, and certainly thank God that we do have the ability to go on and redeem ourselves and be a member of society, and that's what this is doing as well. I'd like to just make a comment, though, that you talked about the difficulty in getting VPSOs in a very real situation. I am blessed in that the community that I live in Golovin, has had the same VPSO for the last 15 years, and the one next to us is White Mountain. He's been up there for over 35 years. So, but that's the exception. And so with that stability, I understand how it is, and we just had a serious situation in our town of Golovin where the VPSO was in contact with the Department of Public Safety, and the right decisions were made And so I want to thank the department for that publicly as well.
Thank you. Commissioner, did you have comments?
Through the chair, if I could just follow up on Representative Edmonds' comments and also the senator's. In the totality, what this bill does, it gives the department flexibility to manage the BPSO program at a much higher level than we've been able to before. And I think that's what the BPSO program was looking for. I think the task force was looking for it. And again, when and if I issue a waiver, that's something I take personally because I'm held accountable for that decision. And if it's a state case or even a city case, most of the time they're state cases of the BPSO. I'll pull up the case report. Some of them are many years old to determine what the circumstances were of that case and then make a decision based on, again, the person's, because you're right, at 19 years old, you could committed a domestic violence or some other crime, and now that person's in his 30s, he or her, and they haven't committed any crimes, and they went along with their life. And do we hold that person accountable and say you can no longer ever be a BPSO or a law enforcement officer? It really doesn't make sense because none of us are perfect in our lives, and sometimes we have to look at it. And again, our ultimate objective is to, again, give the department flexibility, give the grantees flexibility, and work together as, I always say we're married to the BPSO program because that's how I feel about it. And we want to keep that forward progress and momentum that we currently have.
Thank you. And I appreciate that you acknowledge that it's your responsibility once that waiver is granted that, you know, anything that happens will be fall on your shoulders. So we appreciate that. Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And from a historical point of view, Commissioner, at one time, did the Alaska State Troopers have a policy regarding any prior use of marijuana as far as becoming a state trooper?
Through the chair, we have and still currently have restrictions on how long a person could have used drugs, how long that they have to be on the bench before they can be an Alaska State Trooper. And I think marijuana, and I might be off, was 5 years. So if you were 18 years old and you smoked marijuana, that you couldn't be a trooper till you're 23, back in my days.
And as follow-up, Madam Chair, thank you. Through the chair, with the legalization of marijuana, and maybe this is off-topic, but maybe not, what's the policy regarding marijuana use either for BPSO or trooper candidates?
Through the chair, that's an interesting question. We had a discussion about that the other day. In fact, and again, I'm getting probably way ahead of things here, but it was more of if a person works at a marijuana dispensary, under federal law, they could potentially be banned from being a law enforcement officer. So it would be like saying a bartender couldn't be a law enforcement officer. But to get to your question, I'd have to really talk to recruitment effort because I'm not totally sure what we're doing with marijuana right now, but that's certainly a good question.
And one last question,
yes,
Madam Chair, thank you. Through the chair, are state trooper candidates and BPSO candidates subject to a lie detector test?
Through the chair, right now we just polygraph for the troopers, not the BPSOs.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess I just want to say I'm in support of the ability of the department to grant waivers when appropriate, and based on comments from Representative Edgman and Senator and yourself, Commissioner, and other comments I've heard over the years on this topic in different committees. I think having flexibility is good if used with discretion. And I guess this question for the commissioner, is there a policy now for a state trooper if they're convicted, they would, a domestic violence policy, are they automatically terminated, or is there, if someone's a current trooper, is there a policy for domestic violence incidents?
Again, that's a, I can't give you a yes or no question answer on that. You know, that's, again, it depends on the circumstances, because they also have a labor agreement that we have to follow. But if we do investigate one of our troopers with domestic violence, one of the first things we do, we put him on the bench. We don't allow him or her to actively be engaged as a trooper until the investigation is complete. How we've let people go in the department since I've been in the department because of domestic violence, I could say yes, we have, or they've decided to resign on their own.
Thank you. And with that, we're going to move to public testimony. I'm opening public testimony on Senate Bill 81. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Seeing no one, is there anyone online wishing to testify? Seeing no one, I'm closing public testimony on Senate Bill 81. Anything further? Seeing none, Mr. Co-Chair, do you have a motion?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair, I move Senate Bill 81, version 32-LS0362/W from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes and authorize legislative legal services to make conforming changes.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, Senate Bill 81 is moved from committee. Thank you, Senator Olson. With that, we'll take a brief at ease. Thank you. House Finance on the record at 3:02 p.m. Next, we will consider House Bill 283, the capital budget. We heard an introduction to this bill on January 28th, as well as several informational hearings on related topics over the last few months. Today, our intent is to adopt a committee substitute that is identical to the version that the Senate released yesterday. This way, we can stay up to date on any changes made in the other body, even though we don't have the Senate bill in front of us at this time. We plan to adopt the committee substitute and then set the bill aside after we review it. So with that, Mr. Co-Chair, is there a motion on the committee substitute?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair. I move that the House Finance Committee adopt a committee substitute for House Bill 283, Work Draft 32-GH2436-I, dated April 27th, 2022, as our working documents.
I'll object for discussion, and my staff, Tally Teal, is here. She will explain the changes in version I. Ms. Teal, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Tally Teal. I'm staff to Co-Chair Merrick. I did want to run through the documents that you have in front of you today. In addition to the CS itself, you should have five reports from Legislative Finance, lettered, I guess, A, B, C, D, and E. So report A will show you the differences between the governor's proposed budget and the House CS that's in front of us today, which again is identical to the Senate CS that was released yesterday. Handout B will show you every project that was proposed by either the governor or the CS and show you what happened to each of those projects. Handout C is an agent summary, total all funds. D and E are both broken down by House district. D shows you all funds. E shows you UGF only. At the bottom of that pile there should be another document labeled summary of changes, and that's what I'm gonna be working off of today if you'd like to follow along there. Starts there with a general overview, basically a table of contents. For what we're going to talk about, you can see a fiscal summary that shows the total UGF spend in each fiscal year and the total spend overall in the budget, just over $700 million of UGF and just over $3 billion total all funds for all years.
Thank you.
Yeah, to get into the specifics, we have modifications to the governor's budget. The governor proposed about $72 million of funding with SLRF, which is the Coronavirus State and Local Fiscal Relief Fund. We have opted in this CS to remove that as a funding source and replace that with UGF. We rejected several of the governor's proposed projects. These are listed here. Would you like me to read them, Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
Okay. Voice of the Arctic Inupiat, which was a grant to a nonprofit organization through Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. There was a Food Security Agriculture Incentive Grant Program that we removed and essentially split that. It was proposed in the budget, including several allocations, and we've broken those out into their own appropriations, so you'll see those show up later in the budget. We've also removed Cook Inlet Petroleum Potential. There was a project for the Alaska Psychiatric Institute wireless infrastructure that was moved to the mental health budget. So you won't see it here, but you will see it there. There's an Arctic Fisheries program from Department of Fish and Game. There was a technology and IT security program assessment in the Department of Health and Social Services that moved to the operating budget earlier on. We also rejected the governor's proposal for school construction funding. So rather than directly appropriate REA money and or general funds like he proposed, essentially by back paying REAA funds in the operating budget, which is included in the Senate's version, that will pay for the school construction project. We've also rejected or modified in some cases projects that use the Coronavirus Capital Project Fund or the CCPF. The governor initially put forward three projects funded by that funding source. We've rejected two of them, one from Department of Health and one from Department of Natural Resources. And then we've modified the project that was from the University of Alaska and funded that with UGF. Those projects are listed there. We've also expanded the Surface Transportation Plan and the Airport Improvement Plan appropriations into allocations so that those are broken down in the budget for you to see.
Thank you. Any questions regarding those changes? Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. When you say that these are changes that we made, since this is simply the Senate's version of the capital budget that got put into a House bill, those changes are really the Senate's changes, or are these indeed changes that we have made on our side to the Senate's version?
They are, through the chair. Representative Foster, yes. I said we. What I should have said was the CS.
As in the Senate made
the
those changes?
The Senate's version.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you. Sorry. Just wanted to clarify. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. Just on that same topic, then, if this is a CS, am I to understand that if someone was to go to the original House Bill 283, they would find all of these items that we just covered underneath the governor's budget within HB 283?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, yes.
Okay. So voting to accept this now as a CS means we are removing this from our own bill.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay, and we will move to the House Bill 414, IJA bill changes. Ms.
Sure.
Steele.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So another big section of changes. The committee heard HB 414, which is the governor's infrastructure bill, a few weeks ago in committee. This CS that's in front of us incorporates most of that bill, rolls it all in. So a lot of those existing appropriations that were that received additional money through the federal infrastructure bill are plussed up in here. You'll see increased numbers. A couple changes that we made. So what this section identifies here on our summary of changes is things that are different from that bill that has already been rolled in. So I'll go through those changes. We've moved the infrastructure office and the IT 24/7 monitoring project to the operating budget where it was more appropriate. They increased the grant to the Alaska Municipal League from $500,000 to $1.5 million. That's to basically help them with writing grants and getting those grants out to people in the state. They've split the wildlife management and research appropriation. They've pulled out $16 million for statewide wildlife game surveys, which was, as I understand it, essentially money that was freed up through changes in the operating budget that they've used here. I had also added $30 million to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, the Alaska Marine Highway System, for planning and design of a mainline vessel replacement. The next section are essential for each of these four projects that are listed here. The governor proposed some fund, usually $1 million, sometimes $2 million of UGF that would essentially be used to prepare the grant proposal for some of these discretionary grants that are funded through the infrastructure bill, and then had a some amount of placeholder federal authority. And the changes made in this CS reduce those UGF amounts to $250,000 per appropriation, and they remove that federal authority. It also, within HFC, the Energy Programs Weatherization Project, they removed about $16 million in hollow federal authority.
Thank you. Questions regarding the IJA portion? Representative Ortiz.
Thank you. Going back up to the second bullet down, increase the grant to the Alaska Municipal League from $500,000 to $1.5 million. Is that like money to allow them to staff up so that they can assist municipalities across the state in accessing grants through IJA and things like that? Is for personnel and those kinds of things? Is that what it is?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, that would be my understanding. I'd have to confirm with AML, but that is how I understand it, yes.
Representative Ortiz?
No, that was...
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Chair, for Ms. Teal, the removed federal authority for the previous four projects, the impact of that is what exactly?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I hate to speak on behalf of OMB. It might be more directly.
We do have Mr. Seiniger with us, Director of the Office of Management and Budget. Thanks for being with us, Mr. Seiniger. we've been joined by the Senate President. Welcome.
For the record, Neil Steinger, Director of the Office of Management and Budget. And specifically, which projects are you asking about?
Chair, Mr. Steinger, it is AGDC's clean hydrogen research, et cetera, AEA grid modernization reliability, DNR carbon technology, and University of Mineral Security.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Josephson, the impact of reducing those appropriations from the $1 million requested to $250,000 would significantly limit the ability of those agencies to do the preparatory work to become competitively or enhance the competitivity of Alaska for grants that we've identified in the infrastructure bill. Those amounts of money are there to ensure that those agencies can put the best foot forward for some of these competitive opportunities that we've seen. And there's some of these are significantly large opportunities that require a lot of effort and activity on the part of AGDC, AEA, and DNR and the university to make competitive applications. A couple of these are opportunities where there will only be, you know, a small number of awards throughout the country. But they are areas within that infrastructure bill that we see that Alaska has a bit of an edge over other states that with a little bit of additional effort, we could, you know, possibly be competitive.
Representative Josephson.
No, just a comment, Madam Chair, that we may want to get to the bottom of this. I don't know that the senators would have intended to reduce our competitive application capacity.
We will not assume their motives on any of these increases or decreases to the budget. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. On that subject, does this mean that we're spending that money, making us competitive? Is that hiring intellectual capital, people that know how to write grants, or contracting that out? Or what's the actual thing that makes us more competitive?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, do not speak completely, you know, the expert really is Miles Baker, our infrastructure coordinator, but to explain it briefly, there would be the bringing in of subject matter experts and bringing in of grant writing expertise to help us actually apply for these grants. There's also some work needed to be done to look at and investigate the making the sales case for Alaska as the state and as the place to invest these dollars. So there's a little bit of that sort of activity of making sure that we have all our ducks in a row to show that Alaska is the right applicant for these dollars. So we'll be contracting out, bringing in subject matter experts, things of that nature.
Thank you. Anything further? Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So this has nothing to do with any matching dollars, for example, the grid modernization, which is could be billions of dollars in cost. This is just to write the grant to see if we can are eligible or could get some of that federal money. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, generally speaking, yes. This wouldn't satisfy the matching requirements for those eventual grants. This is the prep work to apply. If there is money available after the prep work to apply, of course, we would apply it to the match as eligible.
Thank you. And Mr. Steiniger, can you explain what removing the federal authority will do should you be successful in receiving those grants?
Yes, Chair Merrick, the federal authority, as it was structured in the governor's infrastructure bill, was an estimated to be amount of $5 million for each of these items. So that would have allowed us to record federal authority up to the amount granted to the state. However, should there have been a match requirement for any of those grants, we would have had to come back to the legislature to request those matching funds. Removing that federal authority, the outcome of that is instead of being able to access that appropriation directly, we would likely come to the legislature either with a supplemental request next session, should it take that long to receive the grant, or if the grant came earlier, RPL through the legislative budget and audit committee.
Thank you very much. Anything further on the IJA dollars? Representative Edgman.
Yeah, Director Steininger, and that was because the original projection was 37 million, if I remember right, and that was reduced to 18 something million. Is that the story behind the reduction of that? Then, hollow federal authority.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, that would be true for the HFC weatherization program. Yes, the one at the bottom of this list.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Steininger. We will move to additional changes to Section 1. Ms. Teal.
Thank you again for the record, Tally Teal, staff to Representative Merrick. So additional changes in Section 1 of the bill, which is the FY23 budget. This is essentially a list of projects that have been changed or added. So you have page and line references here in this document. I'm going to not read those, but I will go through each project. Throughout the section, you have the Alaska Long Trail. That's the $14.7 million package that has kind of been circulating. There are many components to that, and they are found throughout that section. For AEA, they have a strategic plan for rail belt assets. The Senate changed that amount, I apologize, from $2.5 million to $1.5 million. There's a mariculture grant program that was the governor's proposal that went from $25 million to $5 million. The CS includes funding for the major maintenance grant fund for school major maintenance. This is not something that was included in the governor's budget. This CS includes $100 million. The total need on that list as it's written today is about $196 million, so this gets us down to about project number 55 on that list. There's also a change to the Sportfish Recreational Boating and Angler Access. That's been increased by $4.5 million of federal money and $1.5 million in matching UGF. Sorry, I think it's actually DGF. We have increased the statewide deferred maintenance, renovation, and repair appropriation. The governor proposed about almost $24 million. This CS includes a total of $50 million. We included the Snowmobile Trail Development Program and Grants, commonly known as SnowTrax, for $250,000 of designated general funds. There were a few changes to HFC program increases. The Senior Citizens Housing Development Program went up by $750,000. The Supplemental Housing Development Program went up by $250,000. And the Teacher Health and Public Safety Professional Housing up by $15 million. That is on top of the $4 million that came over, $2 million of federal and $2 million of UGF from HB 414. We also saw an increase to the state equipment fleet replacement appropriation. It went from $25 million to $30 million. There's an addition of the state-funded road and bridge completion of $30 million. And we've got court security projects that went from a little over $1 million to a little over $4 million to account for some cost overruns in the court system.
Thank you. Questions? Seeing none, we will move to changes to Section 4. Ms. Teal.
First, we've got the Azure adoption to assist with cloud migration. That was an item proposed in the governor's fast-track supplemental budget that's been included here for $23 million. It includes the Kodiak Fire Hall, which was a proposal in the general obligation bond bill, HB 285, that's been incorporated here for $15 million. There was a governor's amendment that he put forward to OTNA to clean up a fuel spill for just under $400,000 there. We've got the grant to the Alaska Community Foundation to deal with homeless housing for $5 million. We've got a grant to the Alaska Farmers Market Association to double coupons at farmers markets for $500,000. There's a grant to the Primary Care Association for workforce development purposes of $2 million. There's a grant to the Bering Sea Fishermen's Association for some fishery studies, and I will note at this point, you will see several grants to the same grantee throughout the bill here. So that first one is about $500,000. You've got another one to the Bering Sea Fishermen's Association for $100,000, another one to the Bering Sea Fishermen's Association for just over $1 million, and another one to the Bering Sea Fishermen's Association for about $300,000. There's a grant to the Blood Bank of Alaska for $2 million. There's a grant to the Bristol Bay Science Research Institute for $3.7 million. A grant to the Food Bank of Alaska for $10 million. A grant to the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission for $140,000. Grant to the same grantee for $88,000. And another one for $170,000. There's a grant to the Lower Kuskokwim School District for a school in Kwithlik who desperately needs a new generator for $614,000. There's a grant to the Providence Medical Center for a crisis stabilization center for $8 million. There's a grant to the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute for workforce development programming for $340,000. There's a United Way of Alaska grant for their restaurant and hunger relief program for $500,000. A grant to the University of Alaska also for workforce development for $2 million. A grant to the Volunteers of America for school-based mental health services for $960,000, a grant to the municipality of Anchorage to replace Starner Street Bridge for $1.5 million, a grant to Ammonic for completion of their port project for $9.4 million, a grant to the Haynesborough to finish the LUTAC dock restoration project for $3.2 million, a grant to the city of Homer, matching funds for their new large vessel harbor project of $750,000. There's a grant to the City and Borough of Juneau for state office building parking here in near the Capitol for $5 million. There's suicide prevention barriers to the Department of Corrections. That was also a fast track supplemental item that was included here in this bill. It includes about $6 million for Mount Edgecombe deferred maintenance. Since they are a state-run institution, they are not eligible for school major maintenance funds, so this takes care of some of their deferred maintenance projects. There's $600,000 for a startup and expansion of a school breakfast program. The next few, let me make sure I didn't miss any. Nope. The next few projects you'll see are from the funded by the Coronavirus Capital Projects Fund. This is about $111, $112 million that came from ARPA. This is federal money. That will go out as grants from the United States Department of Treasury. The governor initially proposed those three projects because of changed guidelines that have come to light since he proposed those projects. Those projects no longer qualify. What you see laid out here are a handful of projects that hopefully do qualify for various amounts. Would you like me to also read those into the record, Madam Chair?
Yes, please, Ms. Gay.
Okay. The Aleutic Tribe of Old Harbor for construction of a community center for $4.4 million. Anchorage Library Foundation to renovate the Anchorage Downtown Library for $2.5 million. A grant to the Association of Village Council Presidents for multi-purpose community facility projects for $10.4 million. Iluukiluk Family and Health Services Center for $20 million. A grant to Kuwerik for multi-purpose community facility projects for $12 million. A Matsu First Responder Training Facility for $8 million, and a Nana Health and Wellness Complex for $24 million, the Petersburg Medical and Public Health Center for $20 million, a Rampart Broadband Project for $9 million, and a grant to Spruce Island Development Corporation for a community internet cafe in New Zinke for $1.4 million.
Any questions regarding the CCPF funds? Representative Ortiz.
Ms. Teal, you mentioned with all of these potential grants, you said they hopefully will they qualify. So the process is they've been slated for these awards, but they have to apply. And do they apply to the federal government? Is that what happens?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz. Yes, that is my understanding. The Office of Management and Budget has indicated that they will be coordinating those applications. Time is short. Those applications are due September 24th. But they do need authority in to spend that money once they get it. So these need to be included in the CS.
Follow up.
And if these grants were all granted and these expenditures went forward as stated, would that use up the funds in the CCPF?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, yes.
Thank you. Anything further on CCPF? Seeing none, Ms. Teal.
Okay. There's also, so to the Alaska Workforce Investment Board, for workforce development purposes, they're getting a grant for $2 million. You can see here within Department of Natural Resources, these projects are the breakout of the appropriation that I mentioned earlier, that food security agriculture grants. So these next few projects are the breakout of that. So you've got agriculture, three-phase electrical service infrastructure in Nananatachiket, I believe, for $3 million. Sorry, there's an Eagle River salmon viewing deck replacement, $200,000 in statutory designated program receipts, which obviously is not included in that breakout. We've got the Food Security Agriculture Incentive Grant Program for $3 million. You've got a plant material center, seed processing and storage capacity improvements for $2 million, and a Nananatachiket agriculture development for $5 million. Additionally, you've got the Municipal Harbor Facility Grant Fund for about $20 million, which again was unfunded in the governor's request. This fully funds both Tier 1 and Tier 2 of that list. And also included here for the University of Alaska deferred maintenance is $50 million.
Thank you, Ms. Teal. And could you please just give further explanation of the $200,000 in statutory designated program receipts for the Eagle River salmon viewing deck so that there's no confusion on what that money
is? Madam Chair, I can try. So last year, in last year's budget, there was a similar appropriation, but it was a reappropriation, so you'll be familiar with those. We'll go through those in the language sections to some extent. And there was an issue with the Department of Natural Resources accepting private donations that the Eagle River Nature Center, the organization who's overseeing the building of this deck, they could not convey those private donations to the department to make this project go more efficiently. There was an RPL on the last day of interim this year in January that gave them operating authority to do this. It's more appropriate as capital authority, so that's what's included here.
So it's somewhat of a technical change.
It is a very technical change.
So that we can accept the private donations that the Eagle River Nature Center collected. We have representatives Ortiz, Josephson, Laban, and Wool.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So am I correct in understanding, minus the Eagle River salmon viewing deck replacement, which comes from SDPR funds, all of the rest of these appropriations below the CCPF line 23 are just direct GF appropriations, is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, yes, all those remaining are GF.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Still be the last item on page 5, here's the last deferred maintenance. That would be wholly at the discretion of the regents. Is that your understanding as to how to spend that?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I would imagine so, but I think Ledge Finance might be able to speak more accurately.
Wonderful. We have Alexi Painter with the Legislative Finance Division with us. Mr. Painter? We also have the capital guy, Michael Partlow from the Legislative Finance Division. Thank you for being here, Mr. Partlow.
For the record, Michael Partlow with Legislative Finance. I'm the Capital Coordinator. Through the chair to Representative Josephson, yes, once the money is appropriated to the university, they are the ones determining their priority for deferred maintenance. They create a list every year, and it should be relatively available to just about anybody to look at what their priorities are for deferred maintenance.
And capital coordinator is more appropriate than the capital guy. Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And since we're still on page 5, I want to roll back up to the CCPF line items. You mentioned there's a September deadline for submission of grant requests. So there's a sense of urgency to get these grants submitted. Is this money limited for these projects? And if the projects fail in that grant effort, does that money lapse back to the federal government and it's lost? Or do we have substitute projects? Are we asking for more than what could be available, or could you describe to me how the how we might lose some of this money if some of these grants are denied?
Mr. Partlow.
Again, for the record, Michael Partlow with Legislative Finance. Through the chair, Representative LeBon. It's fairly complicated, but the language in the bill, I believe on the very last page, gives authority to the Office of Management and Budget if any of these designated projects are applied for and rejected by the Department of Treasury. The Office of Management and Budget is given authority to apply for other projects that may be eligible using that authority.
Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the A list is what we're seeing. There's a backup B list. Are we aware of what that list is and what projects might be listed as a backup?
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, I know that the Office of Management and Budget has identified a number of projects that they believe are eligible. I don't know if that's an official list or if they can speak directly to it at this time.
Mr. Seiniger?
For the record, Neil Steiger, Director, Office of Management and Budget. So we would follow this list, obviously, as appropriated first, Representative LeBon through the chair. The backup list referenced, really at this stage, we have been working with Department of Health and Social Services and other stakeholders to look at projects that may be eligible. If any of these projects fail, we would look to that list of projects as we're developing it. I wouldn't necessarily say there is a backup list per se of specific projects right now. These projects here seem to be the most eligible of the ones that have been identified. But we certainly, you know, as these fail, could share with the legislature, you know, where we're moving to next.
Follow up?
One more follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, the clock is ticking on these grant applications for these projects. Will we know the outcome of all these grant applications with enough time to default to the B list and not lose these dollars? I mean, do you have a strategy you could share with us?
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, our strategy right now is working with the congressional delegation to put a little bit more pressure on the U.S. Treasury to give us a better timeline on when they'll respond to our applications. What we have been told is that there's no guarantee in turnaround time from when the application is submitted, and that, you know, there's going to be a prioritization of applications of certain types, but we're not really receiving a lot of information as to which types of applications would be reviewed first. So I will say one of our primary areas of concern in this specific area is that timeliness of feedback from the U.S. Treasury.
Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And through the chair, it just looks like a very precise and exact dollar amount that's listed, particularly the first one found on page 39, line 5, is $4,454,968. That almost looks like a fill number that we're trying to take full advantage of the available money through the CCPF program. And if we fail on any of these applications, the money could lapse or just not be available to the state, and we're trying to maximize our benefit. Maybe that was more comment than a question, but thank you for the information.
Ms. Teal.
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, again for the record, Tally Teal, staff to Representative Merrick. You had asked about the Nuniak Community Center dollar amount. I believe that is an existing project with a pretty fleshed out backup, and so they have a very precise number in mind.
Thank you. Representatives Wool and then Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm just a question. The Nanana Chiquette Agricultural Development, $5 million. Can you tell me what that is?
We do have Director Shady from the Division of Agriculture with us. Wonderful. Director Shady, could you place yourself on the record and help Representative Wool with his question?
Yes, Madam Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Dave Shady, Director of the Alaska Division of Agriculture. Representative Wolf, through the chair, the $5 million for Nanatot Jacket is further funding for the development of the 100,000 plus acres of ag land we have there near Nanana. Last year we had an appropriation which started phase one of the project, and this is an amount that will continue towards phase one, which has a total price tag of $21 million. So it's another payment as we start to move forward. This coming June, we will start with the sale of the first 2,000 acres of that project out of the 140,000 plus acreages. We believe we'll sell about 100,000 acres.
Representative Wall.
Thank you. Thank you for that. So this is to develop the land to get it ready to sell. Is that essentially what I'm hearing, sort of the infrastructure and plotting and platting and so on needed to sell this acreage?
Director Shady.
Representative Wolf, through the chair, yes, we are assuring and working to see that we put in basic roads and structures along with the subdivision, clearing the lines so that people can clearly see where their lot lines are. And eventually we'll make sure that we have electrical service in there, which is part of the need there and in other agriculture projects around the state.
Great, thank you. I've been hearing from people in Fairbanks looking forward to this.
Thank you. Thank you, Director Shady. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going forth up from the bottom, this is page 41, line 11. Plant material center seed processing and storage capacity improvements. I looked at the budget itself, and it's an appropriation through DNR, but it doesn't say anything more about that. Can you tell me what this is? It says that it's going to benefit all districts 1 through 40, so who knows anything about that particular facility? Does anybody in DNR online or anything?
We do have Teresa Cross, the Admin Services Director at DNR. Ms. Cross, can you help Representative Ortiz with that question?
Yes, for the record, this is Teresa Cross, Administrative Services Director for the Department of Natural Resources. I think that would be a good question to defer to Director Shady that just spoke.
I thought so too. Director Shady.
Representative Merrick, Director Shady, through the chair, the Plant Material Center is a 400-acre farm that is out in the Butte that's run by the Division of Agriculture. The Division processes seed for the farms throughout the state. Last year, the facility we had processed 460,000 pounds of seed. We are at capacity, and we need a full upgrade of this facility, so that facility will be built out at the Plant Material Center in the Butte and serves the entire state of Alaska agriculture from Delta, North Pole, Fairbanks, and down to the Kenai.
Okay, thank you. I'm sure that the farmer from Kenai probably could have answered that question for me as well, but in any case, thank you.
I did see a large smile from our Matt Sue representative. Anything further on page 5? Seeing none, Ms. Teal.
Thank you. Again, for the record, Tally Teal, staff to Representative Merrick. Moving now to page 6 of the summary of changes. We're out of numbers and we're into language sections. So section 11 includes the legislative reappropriation. Section 12 has to do with the Department of Health and Social Services dividing into two departments. So this particular section appropriates existing capital projects within HESS to the Department of Family and Community Services, which is new. Section 13 has to do with the Department of Fish and Game. It includes language to allow the proceeds of sales of state-owned vessels and aircrafts to be used for renewal, replacement, and maintenance of those vessels and aircraft for both years. This was initially a numbers section item that was more appropriate in the language sections. Section 14 also has to do with the split of the Department of Health and Social Services, this time reappropriating those existing projects to the Department of Health. Section 14B appropriates $5 million to the Department of Health for their child care program office. Section 16 is a legislative reappropriation. Section 18B includes a governor's amendment that reappropriates funds from the Fairview Loop Road construction project to the Tachiket Road project for the amount of $15 million. Section 18C is also a legislative reappropriation, as are sections 21 through 29. In the middle of those sections, you get section 24, specifically subsections L and M are new. Those subsections appropriate $25 million to the municipality of Anchorage, contingent on a matching grant of the same amount by the municipality, which can be in kind, for the purpose of preparing a full financial package for final investment decision for the Port of Alaska. Section 30 adds transition costs as an allowable use of the reappropriation. Section 31 is another legislative reappropriation. Section 32 is standard capital lapse language, and sections 33 and 34 are the effective dates.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Ms. Teal, Fairview Loop Road, I think Representative Johnson will know, but that sounds like the Matsu to me. And so that money, the governor wished that money be removed to the Tachiket Road, which is an interior project. Do I have that roughly right?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, that was his proposal.
And I believe Director Shady has information regarding that reappropriation. Director Shady?
Representative Merrick, this is Director Shady. Could you repeat the question? I want to make sure I understand the question.
Representative Josephson.
Yes, through the chair, Director Shady, at page 6 of this outline, it refers to section 18B, which says that the Fairview Loop Road had received, I guess in a previous bill, $15 million. I'm not a Matsu person, but I think that's a Matsu project, and the governor wants that money put toward the Tachiket Road, which is an interior project. Are you right about those things?
Right. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the DOT found other funding for the road here in the Matsu, and so is proposing moving that to the Nanatachaket Project Road. So there will be a main road that will be developed through the project area, and once that's established, that will open up that entire area. So the DOT is currently working on the initial design of that, and this would fund the development of that road, which will help move this project along significantly.
Representative Josephson.
Yes, and just to follow up on that, is the Fairview Loop Road is not synonymous with West Susitna, is that correct?
Representative Josephson, that is not my area of expertise, but I believe the Fairview Loop is an established road and has nothing to do with the future planned road out towards Susitna. But that's the best I know.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And we do have a representative from the Department of Transportation with us, Mr. Carpenter. Thanks for being with us. Please place yourself on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rob Carpenter, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Transportation. I apologize, I'm not wearing a tie. I wasn't expecting to be here. But through the Chair, Representative Josephson, yes, the Fairview Loop Road is in the Matsu. As the Director had mentioned, the Tolchakit's up in the interior, leading to some resource development. The Fairview Loop Road was a GO bond funded originally project, which was then converted, to general funds in a prior year to alleviate that bond funding. Where the Fairview Loop Road is at the moment is in right-of-way and utility relocation, and there's a potential to federalize the project now with little delay, if any, in the project and where it's staged at now. And by doing that, it frees up that state money to use this resource road, and it wouldn't need to be built to federal standards and would be really easy to construct construct quickly.
Sure. Thank you. Anything further for Mr. Carpenter? Seeing none, thank you so much. Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Mr. Carpenter, you actually might have an answer for this. Thank you. I know you're the transportation guy. I don't know if ports fall under your umbrella, but we'll. So on section 24 here, you've got an appropriation. The Senate had appropriated $25 million to the municipality of Anchorage for the Port of Alaska. And to my recollection, I believe they were needing $600 million. Grand total, they need $1.6 billion, but I think it was $600 million that was needed from the state. Is that your understanding?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, you're right. I'm not really familiar with the Port of Anchorage project. Those numbers sound about right to me. That's really all I have, yeah.
Okay, thank you. I guess I just want to throw that out there. And so the $25 million looks substantially less than what was being asked for, and I just maybe wanted to point that out. In my conversations with the other body, they said that they wanted to emphasize some statewide projects, and so just kind of looking at one of the sheets that we have before us here, the unrestricted general fund spend, it's a breakdown by district. It also breaks out statewide, and here I can see that the UGF spend in House CS1, which again is just essentially the Senate version, $582 million falls under the statewide umbrella, and the statewide total is $706. So I do see, so for example, things that would be statewide would be the deferred maintenance for schools, deferred maintenance for the university, deferred maintenance for the state buildings. There's also a teacher, health, and public safety housing. So there's a lot of statewide things that are in here, and I think the goal was to try to do maybe less emphasis on communities directly and more on things that were statewide in nature, so that to try to prevent maybe folks from saying, well, what about my community, what about my community, because when we're doing statewide projects, they're seen as, you know, this is for the entire state, and so I think that's what the rationale there was. And I think part of the other rationale of talking to some folks is they didn't want to use up all of the surplus funds that were left over after the operating budget is funded. So whatever was left over can be used for the capital budget. And I think there's a desire on the other body's part to put some money into savings. So I guess this kind of moves into what I want to get into, which is both the Port of Alaska as well as the Port of Nome. Do we know how much money we usually put towards leveraging federal funds? I think 2 years ago we did a bare bones capital budget, and I want to say that was in the neighborhood of $150 million. Does that sound about right?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, for federal match, that's fairly accurate. We do, ballpark in here. I think in this bill we have like $90 million of Fed Highway and another $60 million of, actually I'm totally wagging that part, of AIP. And yeah, but you're correct in the ballpark.
Thank you. And so I guess kind of transitioning to from what's in this capital budget to what's not in this capital budget, I guess I just wanted to highlight, you know, Nome. They had an ask of $175 million for the port, and I'll maybe expand on that a little bit more here in a moment. And then Anchorage, the Port of Alaska, and there's any number of things that are out there, and I'm sure, you know, folks at this table maybe point out some of those. I know that on the floor recently we had some amendments that dealt with the railroad and Port McKenzie and so forth. But I guess under the spirit of wanting to make sure that things were statewide, you know, the Port of Alaska, I think we all realize, you know, certainly rural Alaska, you know, depends on the port in terms of getting its food and supplies. And so I would support, you know, the Port of Alaska in that respect, in it being a statewide project. With regard to the Port of Nome, I just wanted to give a big shout out to Senator Murkowski and Senator Sullivan and Congressman Young, because they came in under the IJA Act and put in $250 million for the Port of Nome. And we just recently had Senator Sullivan here, and he mentioned the Port of Nome three times, and he said that it had to happen. And then just as we're starting to see the Arctic open up and we're seeing shipping for, you know, whether it be tourism or fishing or shipping of goods and so forth, you know, we're seeing more action there. We're seeing a need for a Coast Guard presence. We're also seeing potentially a need for the Navy in terms of what's happening between Russia and Ukraine. But I just got a letter today, and maybe I'll pass that out to folks here. And I just wanted to highlight that as we look at federal funds and trying to leverage federal funds, we always talk about wanting to maximize the amount that we're going to get for highways, for example. And we don't want to give up this so-called free money from the feds. We've got this opportunity for $250 million that our congressional delegation got for us. But the issue there is the match needs to be secured by February of 2023. And so anyway, I've just got this letter from the Corps, and we'll pass that out to members here. But I just wanted to maybe focus on the fact that, you know, again, it's federal funds. We have this opportunity to get these monies. And so anyway, I just wanted to highlight that. Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Anything further on this capital budget rollout? Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, for your comments on the ports, Port of Nome, Port of Anchorage. I think a lot of things there's statewide spending, like deferred maintenance, where things are actually spent around the state, or the university projects where they're spent in different areas. Then there's statewide impact, which the Port of Anchorage has statewide impact. The airport in Anchorage has statewide impact. I'm sure one could argue the Port of Valdez, because of the pipeline terminus, has statewide impact as well, as does Nome, too. So I think a lot of our infrastructure projects, because what goes in and out of these ports, whether they're airports or ocean ports, are goods and products that get distributed around the state. So we have impact from those projects that have statewide impact, even if they're located in one place. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Ortiz.
Just for clarification, Madam Chair, it is my understanding that the federal funds through IJA that the state will be dispersing are in this budget. That's kind of like a question. Is that the answer to that question? Yes, in terms of IJA funds that we expect to receive from the state, at least in this fiscal year, are highlighted in this budget as to how they're going to be spent. Is that correct?
Ms. Teal.
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, yes, that is my understanding. Both federal and UGF spends in House Bill 414 are incorporated here, with those exceptions that we laid out earlier.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further regarding House Bill 283, Representative Carpenter?
Co-Chair, on that same topic, are those all within one section, or are they spread out throughout the budget?
Ms. Steele, I had the same question last night.
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, they are all spread out throughout the budget.
Follow up.
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, yes, we will work on that.
Yes, and when I had that question last night, a lot of it, you know, majority of it it's through the STIP, so you'll just see increases in the amounts of those projects. I don't know if Ledge Finance or the Department of Transportation has anything further to add to that, but. Okay, I'm getting head shaking from everywhere back there. So we will get a breakout and share that with the committee. Anything further, Representative Carpenter? Okay. Further comments or questions? Seeing none, I remove my objection. Is there further objection to adopting the CS? Hearing none, version I of the working draft has been adopted. And with that, we have concluded our meeting for today. Our next meeting will be tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. We will consider House Bill 226, pay increases for state attorneys, and House Bill 416, Bonuses for Non-Union Public Employees. So with that, at 3:56 p.m., we are adjourned. Thank you.